I hear the voice of my great granddaughter.
I hear the voice of my great granddaughter.
Singing Shut Down Wall Street Now.
Singing Shut Down Wall Street Now.
Here with Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Chris Hedges. Chris, thanks so much for taking a moment to talk to me.
Not at all.
Awesome, great. Well, I'd love to talk to you about what's going on here today. What brings you out?
Well, the fact that, as I think most people here recognize, we've undergone a corporate coup d'etat in slow motion, and it's over. They've won. There is no way now within this corporate state, which controls the courts, controls the elected officials, controls the press, certainly controls all systems of finance, forms of government. I mean, it's corporate lobbyists who write our legislation, it's corporate money, which has replaced the vote, which elects our officials, and they do corporate bidding. So for those of us who care about wresting back our democracy, as well as confronting climate change, mass acts of civil disobedience is all we have left.
Any chance you'll be arrested today?
I teach tonight, and I teach in a prison, and so that one day a week is kind of sacred for my students. And if it wasn't tonight, I would be. I have been arrested in the past. I will certainly be arrested in the future. But on Monday night, I have to be in that prison.
We are unstoppable. Another world is possible. We are unstoppable.
There are a number of themes here. I mean, climate change is a persistent theme, but there's also a very sort of thick anti-capitalist sentiment here. Are the two things linked in an intrinsic way?
Well, of course. It's corporate capitalism that has commodified human beings. And commodified the ecosystem that they then exploit until exhaustion or collapse. There are no internal limits within capitalism, you know, as Karl Marx understood. And the fact is, if we don't begin to set limits, capitalism has built within it, as many economists have noted, a kind of self-annihilistic force, because since it doesn't have limits, it will just push and push and push until there's nothing more to exploit.
Well, do you see a difference between cronyism and capitalism? I mean, are there any useful, valuable things that capitalism does?
All of the great political theorists, starting with Aristotle, you know, going up through Max Weber or anywhere else, have understood that the qualities that go into make someone a good capitalist do not make them a good citizen.
Aristotle talked about capitalism?
Yes, Aristotle talked about an oligarchy, and an oligarchy as being the enemy of democracy, and we certainly live within an oligarchic system.
So when I think capitalism, I think Adam Smith, who called it the natural system of liberty, this notion that people own themselves, that they own property, that they're able to exchange it freely with one another for various things. At its core, like, that is capitalism, this notion of a free market. Like, how exactly does that sort of turn everything into a commodity? Is it the notion that there's any ownership at all?
No,
that's objectionable?
Because there's no free market. That's a myth. You know, I mean, let's talk about African Americans in America.
I'm willing to do that.
Okay, so let's talk about the history of African Americans who built this country with their hands and their blood, their sweat, and what happened? What happened after emancipation? White supremacy stepped in and created a system of economic control. They've refused to give them any land. Through sharecropping, they threw them into debt peonage. So the idea that they're free, that capitalism is somehow free, when you are the Koch brothers, don't talk to me of freedom.
Now, most of what you just described, though, those are actually actions of the state. This isn't the market that is turning black people into subjects, that's refusing to allow them to own property. Actually, the solution was to empower them and allow them to own property and to be equal and free citizens. Isn't that the solution?
Well, that is not what happened after emancipation.
No, I'm not saying that's what happened, but that's what ought to have happened. Isn't the goal?
They're working on behalf of the white slave owners.
Who is they?
The government, including, you know, once Andrew Jackson pulled everybody out for Reconstruction, then you began the reign of terror and the rollback. The government, just as government works today on behalf of multinational corporations, right after slavery, you saw government acting on behalf of white southern slave owners, and I'm talking about a northern government.
And then a government actually comes in and removes government's foot from the heat. From the neck of the black person after the civil rights movement. Isn't that pretty much what happened?
No, the problem was that once Jackson removed the occupation troops in the South, life became a living hell for black people. And the only force they had that was kind of any firewall between them and their former slaveholders was the government.
Right, and there's a danger of sort of meandering down a path about slavery. I wonder, though. Well, I mean, you're describing the state's actions towards blacks. It seems to me that the state's actions and the actions of the markets, sort of the markets' operation, free exchange, two totally different things. Like, conflating the two isn't really useful in understanding the notion that we have property rights, that we have innovation that takes place, and that people can exchange goods with one another.
Let's name innovation. Innovation means you throw all of your manufacturing overseas and you pay workers 22 cents an hour to work in sweatshops in Bangladesh, and the Americans...
I mean, we had sweatshops.
Don't interrupt me.
As well,
I'll
right?
do the interview, but you can't interrupt me. And the fact is, what happens to superfluous labor in America? They're incarcerated.
What happens to superfluous labor? They're incarcerated. Okay, I understand.
Well, that is what happens.
I think at the end of the day, though, when we actually talk about sweatshops, we had sweatshops here.
Labor unions created the middle class in this country.
That's certainly part of what happened. Wage rates increase. We're actually seeing wage rates increase in Bangladesh, all over China. That is happening at this stage. Is it not?
Not by much.
Wage rates are increasing.
These people have
been brought out of poverty. They are leaving subsistence farms all over China, moving to the cities,
moving to the cities to pursue jobs.
That's not happening?
No, it's not.
There is no wealth creation taking place in China. Millions aren't being lifted out of poverty.
For a neo-feudal elite, just like here.
Nope. So lots of people haven't been lifted out of poverty.
Yeah,
only a neo-feudal elite.
You can't judge wealth by wages. So when you come and work for a factory in southern China, and your wages don't give you enough to eat, and when you don't make your quotas, you got to climb to the top of your dormitory and jump off and commit suicide, which happens regularly because people are not paid. When you have no protection from the exploitive class, and when the exploitive class is in bed with the government, then you have to talk about a form of neo-feudalism.
I think there's a lot of strong language there. I do wonder, though, isn't it appropriate to take a look at what conditions were like before? Like, what would lead someone to leave a subsistence farm and then to go take a fairly low-paying job in a factory?
I know you don't want to be cut off, but it's okay to cut me off.
No, that's fine.
I grew up in a farm town, and you know what destroyed every small dairy farm? Were agribusinesses. And I watched these family farms go down that had been in the farm, and I watched these farmers kill themselves. And what destroyed subsistence agriculture in India? It was commodity cash crops.
Oh, isn't the supermarket a wonderful thing? You live under an apple tree, and the apple tree produces so many apples, you don't know what to do. So, you go to the supermarket, and you give the supermarket your money, and the supermarket gives you apples in return. And you say, oh, isn't the supermarket a wonderful thing?
I mean, the idea that people are actually free in a system of global capitalism is just not borne out by economic reality.
I won't dominate the rest of your day or anything. I would like to pursue this a little further, if that's okay. The notion, commodity cash crops, you scale up. At one point in this country, most people were in agriculture. At this stage, very few people are actually in agriculture, yet we're able to produce a tremendous amount of food. We do it at a really, really low cost. We do it at such a low cost all over the world that we're able to feed many more times than what other folks might have thought. We actually thought there was a population crisis at one point in this country. We found a way to feed a global population crisis, in fact. We found a way to feed those people, and it's because of these agro businesses. Absolutely, some people are harmed when they can no longer compete with a new method of doing business. But on net, it seems to me that it is better to be able to feed people in a cheaper and more affordable way than to hold on to an old model of producing food that is incredibly labor intensive and really, really expensive.
It's not cheaper and more affordable.
It's not cheaper.
No, if you go into any marginal area, including in parts of this city, they are food deserts because they can't afford to buy tomatoes that are trucked all the way across the country from California.
Globally speaking and broadly in the United States of America, there are certainly any number of factors that have to do with the way that New York City is operated and the fact that I can kind of only buy food at a bodega or a Whole Foods. That's, I think, a separate and apart from whether or not people on average have a higher standard of living than they did, say, 40 or 50 years ago. The Green Revolution is something that happened, that improved the quality of people's lives. I, I'm willing to accept that there are any number of shortcomings in the world that we live in, but it seems like we have to acknowledge the fact that free markets have been pivotal in lifting people out of poverty and providing innovations and creating a better and more prosperous world. And we can even afford to live in a cleaner world. Is that, I mean, that seems like a fair statement.
You think America's a more prosperous country than we were a few decades ago?
Absolutely.
Well, I don't know. I think you come from another planet then.
Really?
Half of this country now
I see a democratized media that's incredibly affordable.
Don't interrupt me. I say half of this country now lives in either poverty or near poverty. The working class has been decimated in this country. You go into urban centers like Camden, New Jersey, and people are living where I suggest you go visit. You know, the idea that you're talking about free markets when up the street we have Goldman Sachs, commodity traders that buy up world futures of rice, wheat, corn, livestock, so that jack up commodity prices by 200%, so people, and I've worked in Africa, and see, I covered the famine in the Sudan, people literally starve. I mean, this vision that you have, this economic vision, is not connected to reality. And I'll be finished. It's a non-reality-based belief system that is peddled by an oligarchic elite.
Decolonize the water! Decolonize the land! We're changing up the system! We're changing up the land!
Because even this country, I mean, you don't have to go far. You can go across the river into parts of New Jersey. Go to Newark. I mean, you know, walk around the streets of Newark. Look at the infrastructure. Look at how people are struggling. Don't tell me we're better off. This doesn't make any sense.
Well, there's no doubt that there are still poor people. There is still poverty. That is not going anyplace. You're always going to have that. I think the question becomes whether or not you're actually moving in the direction of a better and more prosperous society as a consequence of actually having free exchange and free trade.
We're not.
And I don't know that that's wrong.
We're not. We're not moving in a better direction.
Why should we always?
We'll end it there because I got to do another one.
Okay.
We're not moving in a better direction.
Okay.